Good afternoon, Tri-States. You are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. This is Ken in the reader's seat for the Friday, July 23rd edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald, and we will begin with our first piece from above the fold on the front page. Finkenauer announces U.S. Senate candidacy. Former U.S. Representative Abby Finkenauer, Democrat, Iowa, officially launched her campaign for U.S. Senate at a Dubuque event Thursday morning, surrounded by longtime supporters, family, and friends. Our values as Iowans are the same, like respect, truth, getting things done, and actually standing up for our democracy, she said to a crowd of 60 at the UAW Local 94 Hall. Those things aren't supposed to be Democratic or Republican. We're going to remind folks that they can send somebody to D.C. who can represent all of those. The Dubuque County native served one term in Congress, representing Iowa's first congressional district from 2019 to earlier this year. The Senate seat she is campaigning for is currently held by Republican U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley, who has held it for 40 years. Finkenauer lost her first re-election race for Congress last November to Republican U.S. Representative Ashley Hinson. Hinson won 51.2% of the vote to Finkenauer's 48.6%. In that race, Hinson beat Finkenauer in all but three of 20 counties in the district, Dubuque, Lynn, and Johnson. But even with so recent a loss in the rear view, Finkenauer told the Telegraph Herald on Wednesday that a lot has happened since Election Day, which she feels has Iowans wanting change. In particular, she said the memories of the insurrection of the U.S. Capitol on January 6th and the misinformation she said fueled it are plenty fresh in voters' minds. We have politicians in Iowa who, quite frankly, never stood up to it, misinformation that is, or in fact even perpetuated it, putting our democracy in jeopardy, she said Wednesday. That's the type of stuff you don't forget. Republican Party of Iowa Chairman Jeff Kaufman told the Telegraph Herald he agreed with Finkenauer that Washington will have a lot to answer for, given the past few months. But he disagreed on what that is. We've got trillions and trillions of dollars that have been spent that by any stretch of the imagination we can call waste and inefficient. We have the beginnings of inflation. We have absolute chaos on the southern border, he said. I don't think that helps, Abby Finkenauer. Finkenauer said she also was motivated by her experience with the obstruction she said she faced from the Senate during her term in Congress, particularly on prescription drug reform and rural infrastructure investment. Unfortunately, the Senate, then controlled by Republicans, never touched it, refused to pick it up and vote on it, she said. Finkenauer said some of that work was what led to a huge national Republican campaign of ads aimed against her in 2020. When you do those types of things, they spend millions of dollars trying to take you out. They succeeded, she said. In 2022, I'm going to make sure that we have every resource we can get when it comes to making sure our grassroots donors in Iowa are with us. The elephant in the room when discussing this race is whether Grassley will decide to run again. He would begin his next term at 89 years old. He has insisted on not announcing his intentions for 2022 until this fall. Finkenauer, though, said that has no bearing on her own intentions. This race isn't about Senator Grassley, she said. This race is about Iowa, our country and democracy. We have to have people who actually get it, who don't just read about working families in textbooks, but have actually lived it. Even so, Finkenauer said she has been disappointed in Grassley's service recently. particularly when she compares it to his past work with former Democratic U.S. Senator Tom Harkin. I watched them work together, sometimes disagree, but that was fine, she said. It's what actually gave me a lot of hope about public service and how it was supposed to work. The last few years, we have not seen that from Senator Grassley. Finkenauer pointed to recent months in particular. There's this bipartisan infrastructure plan they're working on with the White House weekly at this point, she said. I would have put money on it that even 10 years ago, Senator Grassley would have been there. Where is he now? Jennifer Hines, an advisor to the Grassley Committee, was quick to respond to news of Finkenauer's announcement, saying in a release that Finkenauer was too radical for Iowa. That is why Iowans fired her just last year, giving her the distinction as the first member of Congress from Iowa to lose re-election after just one term in more than 50 years, she said. Dave Osmus of Dubuque supports Finkenauer as a way to depoliticize Washington. She makes decisions based on what is best for the people, not just the Democratic Party, knowing that there may be pushback, he said. Currently, decisions are made to keep the Republican Party in power. That doesn't serve Iowans short-term or long-term. J.J. Keene of Dubuque took off work for UAW Local 94 to attend Thursday's event. He said that he thought it was time for a change. Not that Grassley doesn't have family values, but I agree with Finkenauer. You're in office so long, you lose sight of what the everyday family does, he said. Before worrying about Republicans, Finkenauer would have to secure the Democratic nomination in the primary. So far, the only other Democrat to file is Dave Mulbauer, a family farmer and former Crawford County supervisor. Finkenauer did not dwell on her Democratic competition. I can't speak for Dave. I'm sure he's great, she said. I know who I am. I know who I fight for. Now, our second front page piece, executive order could have local impact. As the federal government begins carrying out President Joe Biden's executive order on promoting competition in the American economy, local businesses affected by some of the measures are beginning to prepare for the ripple effects. Biden's order, signed July 9th, reaches wide, guiding many of the departments under his executive purview towards stopping commercial consolidation and freeing employees from what are deemed restrictive corporate practices. Among those targeted practices are non-compete clauses that companies use in contracts to keep employees from leaving their staff to join those of competitors. Powerful companies require workers to sign non-compete agreements that restrict their ability to change jobs. The order reads, according to the White House, 1/3 of American companies use such agreements, which often ban employees from working with competitors within certain distances for a given period of time. It is unclear how many companies in the Dubuque area do so. According to the Dubuque Area Chamber of Commerce, these clauses are widespread among industries that deal in sales of or intellectual property, such as financial services and insurance companies, marketing strategists and manufacturing companies, which include some of the area's biggest employers. Chamber Vice President of Government and External Affairs, Ryan Skempf, said that while he did not know if 1/3 of area employers use non-competes, he doubted that 1/3 of employees worked under them. He also said he was unsure of claims in the order that non-compete agreements hurt competition. The presence of non-compete agreements goes to show that employers are worried about losing their talent to other employers, Skempf said. Although it looks like they would reduce competition, they're just as much a sign that we have a thriving and competing market right now. This is not the first time a president recently has sought to reduce non-compete clauses in the marketplace. President Barack Obama asked states to rein in their use of in 2016. Since then, 16 states have taken up that challenge, including Illinois. In 2020, President Donald Trump's Federal Trade Commission held a public workshop on whether it should use its rulemaking authority to restrict them nationwide. Biden's order officially directs FTC to consider exercising its authority to curtail the unfair use of non-compete clauses and other clauses or agreements that may unfairly limit worker mobility. This year, the Iowa Senate passed a bill that would ban non-competes for employees who made $14.50 per hour or less. The bill made it to the Iowa House of Representatives Commerce Committee shortly before the end of the 2021 session, but remained there. Another measure in Biden's executive order takes aim at occupational licensing requirements it deems too restrictive. While many occupational licenses are critical to increasing wages for workers, and especially workers of color, some overly restrictive occupational licensing requirements can impede workers' ability to find jobs and move between states, the order states. On that point, Dubuque Chamber staff agreed wholeheartedly. There are a lot of employers, and we've heard from them, talking about the value of licensing reform and allowing them to move employees where help is needed, between states especially, with Iowa touching Wisconsin and Illinois, Skempf said. Kelly Heisinger is a co-owner of Unified Therapy, a physical, occupational, speech, and behavioral therapy provider with clinics in Dubuque and Fenimore, Wisconsin. She said she and her staff have had to deal with the different licensing requirements between states. I'm licensed in all three states, and the documents I needed to provide, the transcripts, certifications, previous experience, are all very similar, but are all tied up with different state government processes, she said. Heisinger said those licenses come with fees as well, and that the whole process can take up to 3 months. That not only hurts us employers, but also hurts my patients who could possibly have a delay in their delivery of care, she said. If my Wisconsin therapist is out, I can't send any of my Iowa therapists over there because they have to have their Wisconsin license. So patients end up getting canceled, rescheduled, etc. This is similar across different healthcare providers. Biden's order directs only his federal agencies. States all have their own rules, but the order also states the policy of the Biden administration to support aggressive legislative moves to make some of these changes permanent nationally. Staff with Greater Dubuque Development Corporation said they don't know enough about local impacts of the order to comment for this story. And now our final front page piece, right in the middle, at the top and the middle, a huge picture of a young man, it looks like, dressed in a kind of bright blue pair of shorts and top, raising his hand up into the air. I'm not quite sure what he's holding. He's sitting in what looks like a wheelchair of sorts. And behind him are a lot of other people, many of them dressed the same way, clearly at a picnic. And beneath it, the caption reads, Ben Sherlock strikes a pose during Creative Expression Workshop's annual picnic at Flora Park in Dubuque on Tuesday. The local nonprofit organization's picnic had an Olympics theme. And I know Ben. It's very nice to see him there. Our article is titled, Winners All. On a sunny afternoon this week, Flora Park in Dubuque was filled with the shouts and laughter of tri-state area residents as they ran races, blew bubbles, and cheered for their fellow competitors. The participants were local adults with intellectual disabilities attending the latest event hosted by Dubuque Nonprofit Creative Expression Workshops. "It makes you feel good to help other people be happy," said Creative Expression Workshops board member Louise Thurn. "We enjoy bringing people together and bringing that happiness and joy to other people." Local resident Mary Ellen Jensen founded Creative Expressions Workshop 9 years ago to provide an outlet for adults with intellectual disabilities to express themselves creatively through art. The organization, which is operated by volunteers, has since expanded to offer a variety of educational and entertainment-based activities. "We started with probably 6 or 8 people coming to the workshops," said Karen Kingsley, a board member and the current manager of Creative Expression Workshops. "In 9 years, we've grown a lot." About 50 adults with intellectual disabilities, along with friends and family members, attended the nonprofit's annual picnic this week. In the spirit of the Tokyo Olympics, the picnic had an Olympics theme. The festivities began with an opening ceremony. As attendees formed a circle, board member Inga Schilling stood in the center, holding a rubber torch above her head. "Today, we have the Creative Expression Olympics, and our theme is Winners All," she said to a chorus of cheers. As Schilling explained the day's events, including an egg and spoon race, several relays, and a beanbag toss, the torch made its way around the circle, passed from hand to hand. "Olympians, good luck," Schilling called as the crowd dispersed to begin the games. One popular event was a horse race in which participants donned a numbered vest, held a wooden horse, and waited at the starting line. Schilling and other volunteers rolled a large foam die, and when each participant's number was rolled, that person advanced one step toward the finish line. As temperatures soared into the upper 80s, volunteers distributed squirt bottles of water to help attendees keep cool as they competed. Eric Ward stood nearby deciding which event to try first. "I'm just watching, and maybe I'll try the beanbags," he said. Fellow attendee Mackenzie McDonald grinned broadly, surprised him with a spray of water from her squirt bottle. Ward threw up his hands in self-defense. "Don't get me wet," he exclaimed, laughing. At the nearby pavilion, attendees waited to get their faces painted. Many left the picnic table sporting red, white, and blue stars or flags from one of the countries participating in this summer's Olympics. Dubuque resident Bonnie Myers proudly displayed the Japanese flag painted on her left cheek. Myers has been attending Creative Expression Workshops events for close to 20 years. She said she enjoys how we do different things and activities at each event. She also appreciates the chance to interact with friends. "I'm a big socializer," she said. Accompanying Myers was her community trainer, Sheila Burgraff. "It's just good to be able to get back out in the community with friends and have something to look forward to," Burgraff said as the two made their way to the beanbags to begin a game. Kingsley said that during the pandemic, Creative Expression Workshops offered various outdoor events and provided activities for residents to pick up and complete at home, such as art projects and seed growing kits. Moving forward, the nonprofit plans to return to hosting 2 events per month. Upcoming activities include attending a performance of Frozen Junior at the Grand Opera House and an outdoor workshop with Center of I Am in Dubuque. The picnic ended with a meal of hot dogs, cupcakes, and chips, along with medals for each competitor. Smiles abounded among participants and volunteers as the awards were distributed. I think everybody had fun, Kingsley said. This was our first big event, really, since COVID, and they just talked about how happy they were to see each other. I think that was the best. Now we turn to news from Dubuque. And at the top of the fold, we have more funding approved for a rapid rehousing program. The Dubuque City Council this week approved allocating $163,000 in state money to continue expanding rehousing services in expectation of a coming wave of evictions. A moratorium on evictions due to non-payment, issued by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in September, ends on July 31st. City of Dubuque Housing and Community Development Director Alexis Steger has said the moratorium's end could leave hundreds of city residents evicted, facing homelessness. To that end, she recommended that council members direct the funding to Community Solutions of Eastern Iowa to continue its expanded rapid rehousing program. The capacity to support those in need has to be available as soon as possible. Therefore, the Housing Department has been working diligently to complete all of the federal requirements of Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act. Funding to enter into an agreement with CSEI for an expanded rapid rehousing program, Steger wrote in a memo to City Manager Mike Van Milligan. The Community Solutions Program serves area residents who are homeless and living outside, in a shelter or at a campground. If they're literally homeless, we will put them on our prioritization list, said Holly McPherson, Director of Program Development for East Central Intergovernmental Association. The person can look for a unit to rent. Then the Rapid Rehousing Program gives them short-term assistance for up to 24 months. The program typically receives $150,000 in state funds annually. That was almost double through an emergency solutions grant from the Iowa Finance Authority due to the COVID-19 pandemic, though the grant ends on December 31st, McPherson said. The new funding approved by the City of Dubuque will allow the expanded service to continue through the 2023 calendar year. The rent has to be reasonable, but also meet a habitability standard, McPherson said. The goal of this program is to get people back on their feet and to be self-sufficient, contributing members of the community. Some people might need referrals to brain health services or credit assistance. We might help them work on a monthly budget to get there. The $163,000 approved by the council comes from $521,000 in community development block grants that the city received from the state's allotment of federal CARES Act funding. City Council member Brad Kavanaugh lauded the program at the meeting. This is a coming storm, he said. We're going to see it all across the country. We're planning and preparing for it very well. Our next piece is Couples Brewery Dream Begins to Come True at Stockton Site. And we have an insert picture of an interior of a building with some seating some stairs going up and down. Looks like there's at least two floors with it. And the caption reads, "The interior and mezzanine seating area at Mud Run Beer Company are at a Stockton, Illinois site that once housed a movie theater." And our article reads, Mud Run Beer Company opened its doors this week, serving food and drinks from what was once a movie theater in downtown Stockton. Owners Kevin and Amanda Pierce have been dreaming about starting a brewery for years. Kevin Pierce said he stumbled upon home brewing 8 years ago. The couple began working to acquire the 124 Main Street location in 2017. It was just a small kit that graduated to a 5-gallon rather quickly, which then graduated to a 15-gallon rather quickly, Kevin Pierce said. Now we have a 3-barrel brew system at the pub. Currently, the brewery offers 9 Mud Run lagers and ales on tap, though the Pierces hope to expand. Black Hawk Road, a farmhouse lager, is named after the road leading to the farm where Kevin Pierce grew up outside of Stockton. Other Mud Run offerings include Livin' the Dreamsicle and 124 Main Wheat. Other beverages, including wine and spirits, are also available. We understand some people like craft beer and enjoy the company of those that don't, Amanda Pierce said. The kitchen serves smoked chicken, pork, and brisket. The food part of the business also started as a hobby for Kevin Pierce. He began smoking meats after his brother started entering barbecue competitions. It felt pretty natural to include the barbecue and smoked meats, Kevin Pierce said. Starting next week, Mud Run will be open Wednesday through Sunday evenings. Before they could open the business, the Pierces renovated the building. Marcy Schubert, a board member of the Stockton Chamber of Commerce, said the building has a lot of history. It once housed a movie theater. While renovating, the Pierces found old Stockton Theater movie tickets listing admission prices at 27 cents, including tax. The couple also found burn marks on the floor from a 1971 fire. The two decided to leave those marks visible. It was basically a shell, Amanda Pierce said. I don't know how many years it sat empty. We resurrected it, her husband said. The building includes a 900-square-foot backdoor patio. The second level, which seats 80 people, will be available for rentals. The Pierces hope the business will bring tourists to Stockton. We want to serve our community for sure, but we'd love to bring people into our community, Amanda Pierce said. That would be the most rewarding for me. We want to show off our community a little bit. Schubert, who will occasionally serve as a bartender at the business, said she believes the brewery will help bring people to downtown Stockton. It's huge for the area, Schubert said. Now we turn to our opinion page and the Friday Quick Takes, which represent the view of the editorial board of the Telegraph Herald. And we have 2 smiley faces and 1 frowny. But we will start with the first one, which is a smiley face. Citizens can help determine county spending allocations. For those Dubuque County residents who have always wanted more say in how government officials spend public money, now is your big opportunity. Dubuque County supervisors are looking for input on how the county should allocate the nearly $19 million it's getting through the American Rescue Plan Act. Local residents can sign on to a community-wide survey and prioritize where the money should go. Using a hypothetical $100, participants can designate where the money should go among 10 categories eligible for use of ARPA funds, such as workforce development, mental health, housing, and broadband. Furthermore, local businesses and organizations can pitch project proposals that could have a lasting impact and public purpose. Chosen applications will be granted money from the ARPA allocation. An online application portal and the community survey will go live Monday, July 26th on the county website. Dubuque County residents should check it out and weigh in with feedback on where the county should spend its money. And for a lucky organization or business, this might be a chance to turn that dream project into a million-dollar idea. Now, our second piece is, it's a frowny face, and it's disappointing news to hear that the Farley branch of the Dubuque County Library District will close next week with no plans for reopening in a new space. Currently housed in the Drexler Middle School building, it's understandable that the Western Dubuque School's space needs must take precedence. But the growth at the school didn't happen overnight. Community leaders and library officials knew this eventually was coming. It was March when the school district officially rescinded the space-sharing agreement. Unfortunately, no new space was secured for a library move. Instead, beginning August 2nd, books and equipment will be put into storage. The fact that Western Dubuque schools are growing like crazy illustrates one of the critical underpinnings of the important role libraries play in communities. Libraries are wonderful places for kids, fostering a love of reading and building on that love through programming in a town full of young families will benefit the entire community for generations to come. Plans call for a portable collection of books to remain available at Farley City Hall, and library programming will continue to be offered, possibly in outdoor spaces. Those are good temporary solutions, but community leaders and citizens should work together to find a permanent home for this critical community service. I would have to agree, as a retired teacher, we need our books and we need them available. And we need a nice location in all of our communities. Our third piece, a smiley face, is a federal grant awarded to the city of Dyersville will provide a key piece of infrastructure that likely will be a conduit to future growth and development. The $1.5 million federal CARES Act Recovery Assistance Grant will help the city create and expand water and wastewater infrastructure to the Field of Dreams and to the proposed site of a youth baseball and softball tournament complex, as well as a portion of the city that could be home to future industrial projects. Both projects hold exciting potential for the community development. Of the Field of Dreams site as a tournament complex could be a major amenity for the area. And coming off the high-profile Major League Baseball game scheduled there for August, it's an exciting time to consider the possibilities for growth and the Field of Dreams. Development of industrial park sites has the potential to create hundreds of jobs and stimulate private investment. Having a site hooked up to water and sewer lines makes it much more attractive and build-ready for interested businesses. It's exciting to see this CARES Act money used as a catalyst to create further economic development. Congrats to Dyersville leaders as they take advantage of this unique opportunity. You are listening to Iris, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped, brought to you in part by DuPaco and the R.W. Hafer Foundation. I'm Ken in my regular Friday reading seat for the Dubuque Telegraph Herald, and with that, we shall turn to today's obituaries. Charles D. Steger, New Vienna. Charles D. Steger, 76, of New Vienna, Iowa, passed away Wednesday, July 21st at Mercy One in Dubuque, Iowa. Visitation will be held from 2 to 7 p.m. Saturday, July 24th at Kramer Funeral Home in Dyersville. Visitation will continue in Colesburg on Sunday from 1 to 2:30 p.m. at St. Patrick's Parish Center prior to funeral services. A Mass of Christian Burial will be held at 3 p.m. Sunday, July 25th, at St. Patrick Catholic Church, Colesburg. Reverend John Haugen will officiate. Mass will be live-streamed at vibrantcatholic.com. Private family burial will be held on Monday, July 26th, at St. Francis Cemetery in Dyersville. Chuck was born December 20th, 1944, in New Vienna, Iowa, the son of Arnold and Gertrude Lansing Steger. He married Carol Ann Deutmeyer on June 8, 1966, in Petersburg, Iowa. Chuck began working for Barrett Division in Dubuque in 1965 and for Tegler Body Shop in 1966. Together with his wife, they farmed southwest of Colesburg from 1967 to 1972, northwest of Dyersville from 1972 to 1978, and east of Colesburg since 1978. Chuck also began trucking his own semis in 1993, retiring after his injury in 2016. He was a member of St. Francis Xavier and St. Boniface parishes for several years, a member of St. Boniface School Board, Holy Name Society member, and a lifetime member of St. Patrick Parish in Colesburg. Chuck enjoyed playing baseball for St. Boniface while in high school. He loved playing and watching all sports. He was a very social person and always appreciated a good joke. Chuck had a passion for deer hunting, golfing, and his annual fishing trips to Wisconsin with his fishing buddies. He enjoyed playing volleyball and bowling for a few years, coaching his daughter's softball team, attending his kids' little league football and wrestling games. Chuck and Carol took many trips, traveling the world, including 6 trips to Europe, Costa Rica, Puerto Rico, Caribbean islands, 6 trips to Hawaii, and 1 to Alaska. He also took delight in their card club group and in later years, reading extensively every day. Chuck was an honest, hardworking man who took pride in being on time, especially when delivering truckloads. He had a strong faith growing up, starting with weekly Wednesday devotion at St. Patrick's Church. Chuck and Carol always tried to attend Mass, even when traveling. Chuck loved his children and grandchildren and took great pride in their accomplishments. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.kramerfuneral.com. James W. Kramer, Hawkins, Wisconsin. James W. Jim Kramer, 59, of Hawkins, died at home Saturday, July 10th. There will be a private family gathering to celebrate Jim's life. The Nash Jockin Funeral Home in Ladysmith, Wisconsin, is assisting the family. Jim was born in Dubuque, December 28, 1961, to Joseph W. and Mary Ann Kramer. He raised beef cattle on his farm and was an avid dog lover. Alice R. Kelly. Alice R. Kelly, 85, of Dubuque, died Monday, July 19th. Visitation will be held from 3 to 6 p.m. Sunday, July 25th, at Hoffman, Schneider & Kitchen Funeral Home and Cremation Service, 3860 Asbury Road. A Mass of Christian Burial will take place at 10 a.m. Monday, July 26th, at St. Raphael Cathedral. Joanne M. Cawley, Savannah, Illinois. Joan or Joanne M. Cawley of Bullhead City, Arizona, died Tuesday, July 13th. Visitation will be held from noon to 2 p.m. Saturday, July 31st, at Law Jones Funeral Home in Savannah, followed by graveside services at Evergreen Cemetery in Sebula, Iowa. William E. Blakeman III. William E. Blakeman III, 56, of Dubuque, died Saturday, July 17th. A celebration of life will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, July 30th, at Carson Celebration of Life Center in Maquoketa, Iowa. And with these passings, which sadden many, remember that we have our arrivals, and we have a couple of them to share with you in the births column. Our first one, Monday, July 19th, Rettenberger, Nick and Jenna Rettenberger of Dubuque, a boy at Unity Point Health Finley Hospital, Dubuque. And on Tuesday, July 20th, Horner Schmidt, Ryan Horner and Heidi Schmidt of Farley, a girl at Finley. Welcome aboard, you new little ones, and we wish you the very best of lives ahead. Now we'll turn to some news in brief that's also on this page. Police say no threat to community after body found in Prairie du Chien. From Prairie du Chien. Prairie du Chien police said there is no threat to the community after a body was discovered outside on Thursday. Police were dispatched at about 5:30 a.m. to the intersection of South 18th and East Wells Street after receiving a report of a man found deceased near the intersection, according to an online announcement. Police wrote that there is not a threat to the community at this time or as a result of the events that led to this death. Police are not releasing further details about the incident. Public comments sought on Mississippi River Habitat Project. Federal officials seek public comment as part of the early planning stages of a habitat rehabilitation project in Pool 12 of the Mississippi River. The project area covers approximately 26 miles of the river from Lock and Dam 11 in Dubuque to Lock and Dam 12 in Bellevue, according to a press release from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and the Upper Mississippi River Restoration Program. The project is being conducted through a partnership with the Iowa, Illinois, and Wisconsin Departments of Natural Resources and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services, Upper Mississippi River National Wildlife and Fish Refuge. A virtual open house presentation that includes a basic overview of the project is available at go.usa.gov/SMX3UD. Public comments are being accepted through August 14th via that website, by email at publicinvolvement@usace.army.mil, or by mail to U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, Rock Island District, Attention, Regional Planning and Environmental Division North, Brian Morrill, Clock Tower Building, P.O. Box 2004, Rock Island, Illinois, 61201. Jackson County Site plans groundbreaking for solar array from Maquoketa. The Hurstville Interpretive Center will break ground this weekend on a new solar project, and the public is invited to attend. The groundbreaking ceremony, hosted by Jackson County Conservation and the Friends of Jackson County Conservation, will take place at 2 p.m. Saturday, July 24th at the Hurstville Interpretive Center, 18670 63rd Street, Maquoketa. The solar panel system, which should be completed later this fall, will provide all electricity to the Interpretive Center. The total cost of the system is approximately $70,000. The Friends of Jackson County Conservation raised more than half of the necessary funds, over $37,000, to pay for the project. Dubuque Foundation offers free diversity, equity, and inclusion toolkits. A recently released collection of resources aims to help local organizations better understand diversity issues. A free diversity, equity, and inclusion toolkit is available online from Community Foundation of Greater Dubuque's Inclusive Dubuque team, according to a press release. The toolkit includes links to articles, activities, research papers, videos, and other resources that cover topics including systemic racism, LGBTQ+ issues, diversity and inclusion terminology, and data related to local populations. The toolkit stems from a series of diversity workshops the foundation has held since 2018. The toolkit is available at inclusivedbq.org/DEI-toolkit. Art and Craft Fair planned in Platteville for Hometown Festival Week. From Platteville, an Art and Craft Fair will be held in Platteville this weekend as part of the city's Hometown Festival Week. The Hometown Festival Art and Craft Fair will run from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturday, July 24th at City Park, according to the Platteville Regional Chamber. The event will feature vendors, children's activities, and live music. And now we have a little more news from the Tri-States. Bellevue officials ponder study for a problematic intersection. The city of Bellevue is considering funding a study that would evaluate options to improve safety at a busy intersection. The proposed $20,500 feasibility study, to be completed by Origin Design, centers on the intersection of US 52 and 395th Avenue, which provides access to Offshore Resort in Bellevue. The spot has long been viewed as a dangerous area, said Bellevue City Administrator Abby Scrivas. There have been concerns for years, she said. There have been a lot of close calls. She said the intersection meets the minimum, but not the recommended, sight distance for drivers turning out of 395th Avenue onto US 52 because of an obstruction caused by a highway overpass just north of 395th Avenue. The bridge sits higher because of the railroad tracks underneath, Scrivish said at a Bellevue City Council meeting this week. It doesn't necessarily have to do with offshore and the new developers, but we know there's going to be increased traffic because of that, with pedestrians, vehicles, campers, etc. Residents and officials are also concerned about the safety of children who will access the resort from a bike path adjacent to the highway, now that the resort's aquatic center will become the city's municipal pool. In a partnership finalized in April, the city committed financial assistance and an annual fee in return for lower pool admission rates for city residents. Scrivseth said a 2016 study of the intersection offered several options for increasing safety. These included moving signage, constructing a right turn lane for traffic turning north onto US 52, or moving the intersection to the south to allow the recommended sight distance. The Origin Design study would determine the feasibility and cost of these and any other options. Scrivseth said, the city could then use the information in the study to apply for additional funds to cover the cost of any improvements. Representatives from Origin Design did not respond to requests for comment. City leaders have not yet decided whether to fund the study. At this week's meeting, City Council member Tom Roth questioned if it would be financially feasible to move the intersection if the study indicated that was the best option. If not, he questioned whether the study itself is financially worthwhile. That's going to be a big number to move the intersection, he said. I don't know how big a number, but it's going to be in the hundreds of thousands. And if moving the intersection is never going to happen, I don't see the point of spending this $20,000, because I think we already know what the problem is. Scrivseth said the council will vote on whether to fund the study its next meeting, scheduled for August 23rd. And there was also a picture included, a rather large picture, of the intersection in question. And it shows a large arcing left turn going into the area. And the caption reads beneath it, "Traffic moves through the intersection near Offshore Resort in Bellevue on Thursday. The City of Bellevue and various other regional entities are considering a $20,500 feasibility study, looking into options for improving safety as traffic increases." The local unemployment rates for June dip from 2020 figures. Recently released data showed lower unemployment rates around the tri-state area last month compared to pandemic-inflated rates 1 year prior. Dubuque County had an unemployment rate of 4.6% in June, according to Iowa Workforce Development. That is down from 7.8% in June 2020, during the early days of the COVID-19 pandemic. Dubuque County saw a higher unemployment rate than the state of Iowa, which experienced 4% unemployment in June, down from 7.1% a year earlier. Other local counties also saw lower unemployment rates compared to last year. In Clayton County, the rate was 4.6% in June, down from 6.1% in 2020. Delaware County's rate was 3.4%, down from 5% a year ago. Jackson County's rate was 5%, down from 8.3%, and Jones County's rate was 4.6%, down from 7.2%. In Wisconsin, Lafayette County had an unemployment rate of 3% in June, down from 5.7% a year ago. Grant County's rate was 3.6%, down from 7.3%. Crawford County's rate was 4.7%, down from 8.6%, and Iowa County's rate was 3.7%, down from 7.3% in 2020. Statewide, Wisconsin's unemployment rate was 4.5% in June, down from 8.6% last year, according to the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development. Illinois had not released county-level unemployment data as of Thursday afternoon, but the statewide unemployment rate in June was 7.2%, down from 14.2% a year prior, according to the Illinois Department of Employment Security. Iowa Supreme Court justices, local legal professionals, meet. Some COVID-19-related changes in Iowa courthouses might become common practice to better the function of the judiciary system, some of the state's top judicial officials said. Iowa Supreme Court Chief Justice Susan Christensen and Justice Matthew McDermott spoke to the Telegraph Herald about the potential changes during a visit to the Dubuque County Courthouse on Thursday. The pair met with legal professionals and toured the courthouse. Christensen said that a lemonade task force is currently looking at whether some of the court protocols instituted during the pandemic should continue, such as relying more on technology and holding some types of court proceedings virtually. The task force's recommendations are expected to be announced sometime in August. The idea was, we got a lot of lemons last year, she said. Now, can we make some lemonade? Thursday marked the first Dubuque visit for Christensen, who began serving as an Iowa Supreme Court Justice in 2018. She was appointed as Chief Justice in February 2020 to succeed Mark Cady, who died unexpectedly. She is the second woman to hold the position in Iowa. McDermott was appointed to the Iowa Supreme Court in April 2020, and Thursday was his first in-person courthouse visit since then. While he was raised in Carroll, Iowa, he also had family ties to Dyersville, he said. He also was chosen by Christensen to be the court's liaison for Iowa's first judicial district, which includes Clayton, Delaware, and Dubuque counties. Soon after his appointment to the Iowa Supreme Court, McDermott was placed on the Jumpstart Jury Trial Task Force. The task force made recommendations for when and how to resume jury trials after they were put on pause due to COVID-19. When we shut down jury trials, I turned to him because he literally just came out of private practice, Christensen said. Several orders were issued from the Iowa Supreme Court mandating when jury trials could resume, and they started again on February 1st. The court system never shut down, but we had never shut down trials before, McDermott said. We needed to figure out the safeguards to get back into courtrooms. In lieu of in-person jury trials, other ways of continuing cases were put in place, he said. Some cases instead went through a bench trial in which a judge decides the case. The court system also relied more heavily on technology, doing hearings over the phone or on video meeting platforms. The current task force is looking at court practices and will consider if virtual proceedings might be better in some cases, Christensen said. We never would have been faced with that without COVID-19. Not that we want to go through that again, she said. We have a couple of more bits of news in brief. One person injured in chain reaction crash involving four vehicles in Dubuque. One person was injured in a chain reaction crash involving four vehicles Thursday morning in Dubuque. Diane M. Shannon, 61, of Dubuque, was transported by ambulance to Unity Point Health Findlay Hospital for treatment of her injuries, according to Dubuque police. Police said Shannon was traveling west in the 3600 block of Dodge Street at 6:45 a.m. when traffic came to an abrupt stop. Shannon's vehicle did not stop in time and struck the rear of a westbound vehicle driven by Ron T. Hagenston, 56, of Dubuque. Hagenston's vehicle struck the rear of a vehicle driven by Randy J. Helmy, 64, of Dubuque, and Helm's vehicle struck the rear of a vehicle driven by Nancy L. Wetter, 58, of Benton, Wisconsin. Shannon was cited with failure to maintain control. Police, one hurt in rollover crash in Dubuque. Police said one person was injured in a rollover crash Thursday morning in Dubuque. Jamari V. Kristen, 18, of Dubuque, was transported by ambulance to Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center for treatment of his injuries, according to Dubuque police. Police said Kristen was traveling north in the 2500 block of Jackson Street at a high rate of speed at 1:24 a.m. when he lost control of his vehicle. Kristen's vehicle struck a parked vehicle and rolled over onto its top. The parked vehicle struck the rear of a second parked vehicle due to the impact of the collision. Kristen was cited with failure to maintain control and failure to provide proof of financial liability. And let's take a look at the weekend buzz. The noteworthy things to do this weekend. Sweet Corn Days today through Sunday, Founders Park, Elkader. Carnival, parade, farmers market, food vendors, beer tent, live music, fireworks, free sweet corn. Admission is charged for some events. $10 for unlimited rides, carnival wristband, $1 for individual rides. More information, www.elkadersweetcorndays.net. Field of Dreams, Ghost Players, Greatest Show on Dirt. Saturday, Field of Dreams Movie Site, 1 p.m. The Field of Dreams Ghost Players are returning for the first time in 2 years with their interactive comedy show. This one-hour show is great fun for the whole family. Bring lawn chairs. Concessions are available on site or bring your own. Cost free. More information, www.fieldofdreamsmoviesite.com. Hope and Healing Art Gallery. Today through Sunday, Seven Hills Event Center. 6 to 10 p.m. today through Saturday. Today, Saturday, 4 to 8 p.m. Sunday, showcase featuring more than 30 artists whose work is focused on healing and perseverance through trauma. Today and Saturday will include a fully stocked bar, hors d'oeuvres, and a silent auction. Proceeds benefit Riverview Center. Cost for today, Saturday, $10. Online, $15 at the door. Sunday, $5. You have been listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. This has been Ken in his regular Friday reader seat, and I wish you all a wonderful, though bit warm, weekend ahead, and I'll be back again in 1 week. Stay safe, have fun. Until then, take care.